As an employee-owned financial firm, Baird offers advice solely focused on clients' needs, while consistently investing in their expertise and capabilities to serve those in need. More information at baird-difference.com.
Now, as we move on for the rest of the day, let's hope that we can hear from our great friend Mayor John Hamilton as he joins us on a different medium today. It's the medium of Zoom. Mayor Hamilton, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me, Mike?
Loud and clear. This has been a technologically challenging couple of days, but no.
Sorry. What's going on?
We have an issue with receiving phone calls, so I've had to scramble out. Rose was great today to help get this taken care of, and my great friend Karen Butcher at the MCCSC. So everybody normally picks up the phone and goes, well, there's something amiss. But we thank you guys for making other arrangements. I was going to walk down like I usually do, down the 7 line, and cruise into Fernandez Plaza, and then into the City Hall. But the rain is out and about. But a tremendously busy weekend. I couldn't get anywhere near the stage on Friday. You did a great job of singing. You are not afraid of the microphone. Some of your colleagues, on the other hand, maybe just a little shy. But what a turnout on Friday. We walked down there about 5:45, and my wife and kids met me. I was already downtown. I was watching USA and England. And obviously, as Fox just told us, USA defeats Iran. They are into the round of 16. Huge accomplishment. The USA has not, I don't believe, has done that since 2004. But anyhow, so they park in the 4th Street garage. We're downtown. The whole program's, there are people everywhere. I was not surprised, but I was surprised that when I started walking around the square, that the people didn't dissipate. What a crowd that was. What a great canopy of lights.
It was a beautiful gathering, a wonderful tradition. My heart always goes to my mouth, making sure the lights will, you know, it's not my job, but, you know, ensuring that the lights will go on. And they do. It was, I don't know how many people, but a lot of people. I'm sorry, you were out there. I didn't get to.
I couldn't get close enough. There was, again, I was there. Let's see, you flipped the lights at 6:45-ish. I was there at 5:45, and there must have been, I don't know, 1,000, 2,000. I don't know how to judge it or measure it, We went into the courthouse, came out of the courthouse after taking some pictures and looking around in there, and there were people standing almost all the way to the sidewalk right in front of those doors.
So it was nice weather, you know, it was pretty temperate, and do a great job getting that program through. And lo and behold, the guy in the red suit shows up every year. It's terrific.
He did, and the obviously, was that the Bloomington Brass Band that was playing the tunes to get everybody fired up? And then we had the commissioners, I believe, spoke, and then we sang some carols. And there, you're right, there comes a big guy in the red suit. You count it down. We got a little off program there, but Jim Inman Jr., boy, he rallied. He got Santa back on track there. Santa was getting a little into the weeds.
Was he? I didn't hear that.
He was enjoying the big moment, and Jim made sure that our countdown stayed on time, and dedicating it to May Cassidy, a very touching moment as well. Cassidy Electric and everything going on. But, you couldn't ask for a better night to kick off the season.
It was really, really nice and fun, a privilege to be part of that. And now, you know, of course, it gets dark kind of early with the clocks changed, and we. But it sure makes it a beautiful downtown for the next few weeks.
Absolutely right. Now, part of your busyness on that Friday was also were you with the Bloomington Symphony Orchestra down at the Buskirk Chumley as well?
Yeah. So they, you know, they do two performances on either side of that. They do a 5 or 5:30 and an 8 o'clock. And the 8 o'clock one, I got to do a narration of the famous 'Twas the Night Before Christmas that had been set to an orchestra piece. And that went without a hitch. That was really fun, and a great crowd in the Buskirk enjoyed lots of wonderful orchestral music. And it was really a nice capper of the evening for me. And then I strolled home through the beautiful city
with the with your candy stripe scarf on, very very
and nice. and uh, uh, you know uh, um, the Christmas songs kind of ringing in my ears. So that was really nice.
It was. One of the interesting parts afterwards was just I told the story yesterday when I was kind of reviewing my weekend, was the look of exasperation on the face of people trying to turn north from Kirkwood while a sea of thousands, of course I'm exaggerating, a sea of hundreds, you know, the little guy's white, right? On the little sign, on the flashing. So that's when we're supposed to walk. And the people are just wondering, where are all these people? Well, where do you think we're coming from? So there was definitely a ripple downtown. We hope our local businesses on Black Friday benefited from that, because we had all the kinds of things going around the square before that started as well.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point. It was busy. I got there similar to when you got there, probably maybe a little later. I'd been in Indy that day, but it was busy. And as you said, it kept busy kind of all through the evening too, which is a great thing. And as we've mentioned, you know, the free weekend garage parking that runs through the rest of the season, and the free street parking during the last Thanksgiving holiday weekend and through Christmas. But it's going to just help encourage people to get down there and enjoy the beauty, and maybe find some ways to get refreshments and to get presents and just get a little spirit going.
And it's in the forecast, you're right. I think that was the best part, because it looked to be rainy earlier in the week, and then it just kind of started getting warmer and warmer and warmer, and it was nice all the afternoon as well. So that wasn't going to deter folks, and everybody appeared to have an absolutely fantastic time. Speaking of garages, my wife parked in the 4th Street garage, and that is the first time I had been in there. Boy, that elevator, whoop, zips you right up to the top if you need to go. That's where we were. She parked on, I think, the 5th floor.
Really?
Right. Just clean, lovely, and you know, sometimes where I work downtown, that's not my garage, so I'm not going to use that garage. I use the garage that either I have a pass or access to. But well, nice job, very modern. It looks just like it should look, and it was efficient. We got out of there in no time as well. So it's a lot easier to get out of a crowded garage when you don't have to pay.
Yes, you're setting a good example, Mike, using that garage. And it's true, it is quicker when you don't have to have a line leaving. So that may be a little different at other times, but that's what it helps us deal with, those kind of situations.
And if you live on the south side, you shoot right out like we do, and boom, right down College and away you go. Strategery, you got to have some strategery sometimes.
Get a plan.
When they zag, you got to zig. You can't go with the flow. You can't go with the herd at all the time. But it was great to be crowded. It was great to be busy. And then on Saturday morning, you turned around and you were right back in action. That was the big John Fernandez dedication, correct?
I was. Now, I do want to note, the most stressful part of the weekend for me is the second verse of Here Comes Santa Claus.
Wait, there's a second verse?
Because there's a lot of mumbling going on, including up on stage. That's the tricky part. Everybody knows the beginning, Here Comes Santa Claus, Here Comes Santa, but then it gets kind of tricky. But we made it through. But yes, the next morning was a really nice, again, it was a lovely day. And the farmer's market becomes the holiday market for the close of the season. And there were lots of vendors out and lots of people out. And we got to do a special naming of of what had been known as Showers Plaza, that front brick, beautiful gathering space, which often has performances and others. We got to name that for the previous mayor, John Fernandez. So it is heretofore to be known as, with a plaque to prove it, Fernandez Plaza.
Now, do you have to jump through any hoops to do and change things like that? Does that go through the council? I mean, it's a little inside baseball, as you like to say, but I hope not.
I don't think so.
As long as you put the plaque up, you're great, right?
I think the plaque does it. I don't think Public Works needs to do that. Public Board of Public Works, but sometimes they sneak that through without me. But I believe this kind of thing we do in honor of past mayors.
I just don't want anybody.
John was really touched.
I don't want anybody down there squatting is my larger point on that. We don't want that. Did he know this was coming? Did you approach him about it, or did you tell him once it was all decided you were going to do it? You said surprised and touched, so I'm guessing it was the latter.
Well, he knew about it before we announced it. We had arranged it, and he got to invite family, and it was kind of cool because there were a bunch of former colleagues from city government who came back and were there, which meant a lot to all of us, I think. But we kind of thought about what might be good and checked with him how he, because you know you don't want to name it for somebody and they're like, I never liked that place, or you know, I didn't, or I voted against it, or something.
Yeah,
that
thanks, no thanks, right?
Yeah, right. But he had really a lot to do with the farmers market coming downtown off of 6th Street, and the whole he actually sponsored the 1% for the arts ordinance. We were the first city in the state to do that, and he was a sponsor when he was on council. And there's a lot of art down there, of course, and it's a place of real bridge building that I think he felt very good about being associated with. So it was really nice, nice quick ceremony. We did it. We couldn't take too long because there were, you know, there's a whole series of entertainers ready to go on that stage too. But it was a very nice morning.
And obviously that Saturday morning also presented the winter market, which means the farmers market portion of the season was over. Well, it was nice to have a boring one for once, wasn't it?
I'll sign up for that, Mike. I'll sign up for it. We, you know, the farmers market at its root, as it were, is a sale of local produce and comestible, eatables, you know, by people who grow them. And I, from all I can gather from those sellers, the farmers are very pleased with the volume and the attendance, and it was a nice season to get through. And I think they felt good about it. We had a lot of healthy food go through there and a lot of really nice mornings that people enjoyed, Saturday mornings.
Outstanding. And the winter market, I just want to make sure that people are all on the same page that went on last week. That was just a one-week deal down there. I don't want to mislead and think that's the new replacement for the – that was just – the Black Friday local or Small Business Saturday, one weekend only.
Yeah, that was just the traditional holiday market. Sometimes it's indoors, sometimes it's outdoors, but that is a one-time thing. And then the ongoing winter market's back down at Switchyard.
So there is one, just not in the Fernandez Plaza.
Exactly.
There we go. So there's always marketing to go on. Didn't they used to do one at Harmony School at one point? See, now I'm going to cross the streams.
Yes, the winter market used to meet in the Harmony School gymnasium, but it got bigger and Switchyard opened, and that became a relocation. These markets, you know, they move around year to year.
And again, highlighting just what a great feature Switchyard Park is. It is a 365, 52-week event space, and that's the great with having the inside with the garage doors that go up. You can use that in the warmer weather and close it up in this type of weather. So that's been great. And
speaking of indoors, Mike, for the first time I went to the indoor pickleball courts at Twin Lakes, which I hadn't.
Where's that
before.
At?
So you may ask that. So you know Twin Lakes there on Bloomfield Road, West Second. So you can play pickleball indoors. Now here's the question they ask you when you go to play pickleball: one, are you a member? If not, you can get a day pass. That's good, but it's a great health facility. But then they say, do you know how to assemble a pickleball net?
Oh,
and of course, the answer everybody would give is, yeah, sure, I can do that. And then they give
you don't want to look like an outsider.
So you don't look like an idiot. Yeah. and you roll it out and it's kind of complicated. It took four of us a few minutes to figure out how all these pieces work. But then you assemble a net and you play it on the basketball court. It was pretty fun. I played for an hour and a half.
Well, they have a ton of basketball courts, as we know, at Twin Lakes. Are they marked, obviously, for the pickleball? Because you don't want to get in that kitchen. That'll get you in trouble.
No, they have the kitchen. They got the pickleball linings on there. You got volleyball courts, you got basketball courts, you got pickleball. They're all on there, but they're color-coded.
Well, let's just paint some lacrosse things on there as well, just to fill that up. Very cool. So, well, is that a new feature for Twin Lakes?
No,
this
they've
time?
Had it. They've okay. had it a while. I know they have indoor pickleball gatherings there. I didn't know you could just kind of rent it yourself and get it out there. But it was fun. It was cold and rainy outdoors, and so it was a nice Nice exercise there.
Well, very cool. Mayor John Hamilton is the voice you're hearing. He joins us every Tuesday, and we always get caught up on what's happening. And obviously, for a busy, hey, we're closed all weekend. Well, we've had a lot of stuff to get to, but everything is open, back up and running. Vacuuming of leaves is still going on. We've touched on that a million times about what you can do not to wait or deal with that. So that's not terribly – well, it's always important, but it's just it's one of those things. This is the last time for doing all of that.
Well, we are shifting to bag pickup or container pickup of leaves next year. This year, we're still doing the vacuuming runs through the neighborhoods, and you can check online to get your timing and all that stuff. But you know, we're going to shift that next year into we will pick up bags of leaves and containers of leaves, not plastic bags, but the biodegradable bags of leaves, but won't be doing the vacuuming. There's plenty. We'll be given a lot of information about that. But I will tell you, Mike, I'm a homeowner and I have a lot of leaves on my lawn. But I will tell you, mulching it up is kind of magical. Your mower, I have a ton. I mean, I got maples, I got oaks, I got all kinds of leaves filling my yard. But you just run your mower over it. Maybe slower, a little slower.
Yeah, you got to go a little slower because the air will blow them. Then you chase them all day.
You can't do it when they're wet. You know, you got to kind of find a day that they're not totally sogged out. But they just kind of magically disappear, and it fertilizes your lawn and all that. So that's kind of where we're hoping to steer people. But we will be doing other kinds of pickups next year.
The reason I brought that up is because I know last time we spoke, people were concerned about, well, we paid for that. Now that service stops. Well, no, they're going to pick up the bags. They're just not going to send the vacuuming. So the service doesn't perhaps stop. It's just a different kind of service moving forward.
You know, I know change is frustrating sometimes for people, but as we look at that service, it's really inefficient. It's really energy and carbon wasteful. It's really not what should be done with leaves to the extent possible. And we'll be doing some more training and outreach and offering of services and help. Really, it's best to treat the leaves, let them be where they are. That's what nature does. They keep the soils richer, and they, you know, avoid all the energy use of collecting them and picking them up and moving them and taking them somewhere else. So we're encouraging that. But we got more time. We get through this season with the traditional methods as you like. But I think I even put a video online. You can check it out if you want to chuckle a little bit watching me mulch up some leaves. But I did my lawn a couple weekends ago, and it's kind of amazing. They just disappear.
Poof, they're all gone. And my neighbor helped me out. He came by and did a little on my side yard. So
did he? Big, all right, there you go.
Thanks to Jeff and the local helping me out. Mayor John Hamilton is checking in. I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it because I think you have probably seen the announcement about the judicial hearing for the annexation court case scheduled for this Friday. If you haven't, you have, great. I figured you did. An in-person judicial hearing is scheduled to take place Friday, December 2nd at 1 p.m. at the Justice Building. Members of the public are welcome to attend. Judge Nathan G. Nykirk of Lawrence Circuit Court may, that's the key phrase in there, may decide whether annexation opponents in Area 1A and 1B will be granted an extension of their remonstrance efforts. That was the press release I saw. What does this, and you do not only play a lawyer on the radio, you do play one in real life. What does this mean for Friday for people who are interested in what's going on?
Well, the wheels of justice do move slowly. They move. As we've talked about this, all this can take some time. So, you remember we have two different lawsuits pending about annexation. One is about the constitutionality of the state legislature's change of the waiver rules. That is not this case. That case is still kind of pending. This case is about the West Side areas 1A and 1B, where the remonstrators have said we think we should have had more time to file remonstrance petitions. Under state law, we have said, no, you had plenty of time and everybody was doing all kinds of things and you organized yourselves well and had plenty of time and you don't need another you fell a little short. So now you're kind of coming in and saying, hey, we want to try again. That's what the hearing is about. So it's kind of a preliminary question of whether they can go to trial on is annexation appropriate or not, because the anti-annexation group has said, well, we didn't get 65%, but we want to try again with more time. We expect the judge to rule against that, but that's what the hearing is about on Friday.
Who picks the judge? How does this case get it says Lawrence Circuit Court here, so that it was Lawrence County. I'm going to how does that get distributed? Do you bid for that? Did the attorneys come together and say, well, we won't keep it here locally because somebody will recuse themselves, et cetera, et cetera? How did we get to Lawrence?
Yeah, I don't know all of the details, but basically, it was assigned to local judge, county judge, as is typically done in a lawsuit filed. And two local judges, I believe, recused themselves from hearing it. They don't explain exactly why or anything. We don't really know, but they recused themselves. And in that circumstance, the lead judge, I believe, of Monroe County then seeks to assign a special judge from a nearby place, usually that's convenient. And that happened in both of these annexation lawsuits. We have one judge from Lawrence County and one judge from Owen County because the same thing happened. And they basically assign it to a nearby judge who I don't know if they drew the short stick or the long stick, but they got it. So here they are.
Odd or even. Odd. Yeah. it says here it may decide whether will be granted. Can it be continued? What would stop it? Why wouldn't it be decided?
Well, I'm not sure they will automatically decide it in immediate oral arguments. There's arguments being made, I think, on Friday. And so sometimes judges take it under consideration. That would be typical, I think, or they could rule from the bench that day. But the both parties will be present. Attendance is free. There's no tickets required if anybody wants to go see.
You don't have to go to StubHub. You can just come can just come on in. Whatever is decided, like you mentioned, if it's not decided, will the judge come out, that would be Judge Nykirk, and say, okay, I will have my decision in 10 days, 50 days? How does that work if it does at all?
Yeah, they may give an indication of how soon, but they don't have to.
Okay.
Kind of up to the judge managing their court if they know or they want to give people a heads up. But I really will just all be waiting to hear how they respond to that. You know, and again, I
think that's what frustrates some people, because that we don't know how the process works. And we watch a TV show and in 60 minutes they solve the crime, put the guy in jail. Well, I mean, that's how we think things should happen if we don't know how they work out. And either side of the argument would be, well, we're doing it our way and we've done it our way. And well, we're doing it our way, but we just don't have an end game. And us sports fans say, well, there's time on the clock. And when the time's up, the game should be over. But it's not. And it keeps going and going and going and going.
Yeah, it's more like a baseball game, and you never know how long an inning will take, or you know, if it's a tie ball game, you just
right.
keep going, or whatever.
You have to put a ghost runner on second base.
Oh, that's okay. That's the new plan. I don't know how that would work exactly, but you know, I do hope this gets resolved. Ultimately, what will happen, we hope, in the West Side, this case, is there will be an actual trial about is annexation an appropriate step. Is the city planned appropriately? Has the city followed the rules to pursue that? And we think the answer to all that is yes, but that's what the trial ultimately needs to get to. And this is all just kind of back and forth warm-up stuff in a way to get to that trial.
And, well, we will know maybe something Friday afternoon.
Maybe next Tuesday we'll know. We'll
maybe
see, right?
Next Tuesday. That's exactly right. So we will get that worked out. So that was news making headlines today. I wanted to make sure we got that taken care of as well. Boards and commissions, I saw your op-ed in the HT. That's a great way for people to get involved in government at multiple and lots of levels. Whatever your preference may be, these boards and commissions open all year round, Mayor Hamilton, or is this 'tis the season?
The city has about 50 boards and commissions with hundreds of people who serve on them. And they do have a turnover all through the year, though at the end of the year, December into January, there tend to be more than usual terms ending. You know, often people get reappointed, but not always. They sometimes are done serving. They choose, or their time, you know, time is up. But really, it's a wonderful way to get involved in city government. I used to serve a chaired a commission. It was really fun and interesting, and a way to get involved. Many people do, and then end up getting more involved in the city. I expect some people get involved, and then they say, "Nope, I've had enough of this," and run for the hills. But a lot of people really enjoy it, and we have need for people on, you know, all kinds of different commissions: on Tree Commission, Martin Luther King Day Commission, on Plan Commission, on, you know, just check the website. There's all kinds of commissions if you're interested in.
Now, last Wednesday, the city put out your plans for the convention center expansion. Yeah. I can't let that slide by. That's been such a hot topic. What in there is different from perhaps what we've talked about, or what was the point of this? Was this just to give everybody here's the paper on how we'd like to do it so you can use this as a reference material? Tell me about last Wednesday.
Yeah. You remember in early October, we kind of said, well, the attempt to navigate a transfer did not work. We were not able to move that forward. We didn't get meetings or much engagement on that. So we said we're gonna release the other plan of how to go forward with a 501c3 approach. And the county commissioners, in a surprise to almost everyone, actually then created a capital improvement board, which was a path B, a different approach, a couple weeks ago, early in this month. And we felt it was important to describe where we were, which that memo tries to do. It continues to believe, as I do, it was from several staff to me, suggesting that the nonprofit organization approach was the optimal one. It did also point out, Mike, that if the capital improvement board path were to be taken, it was really important to add 15 more specific components to it that were not mentioned or included. So it's really trying to lay out, we continue to think of 501c3 as the best approach, but we also note that if people are interested in a CIB, it really needs to include a bunch of other stuff in it that wasn't included, that was talked about a couple of years ago. So it just tries to lay that out. We kind of seem to be the ones who try to articulate in clarity what the options are, which we're trying to continue. I think there's a county council meeting tonight. We'll see what happens with that. And we'll continue to, you know, I continue to want to see a great convention center expansion be done. It's just not, we don't exactly have the path there yet. I continue to be optimistic, but got to just stick to it and see where we go.
Marty Hawk, obviously the county councilwoman, will join us in the 4 o'clock hour tomorrow and give us an update of what transpired at their meeting tonight. When I talked to Marty last Wednesday, she was concerned about the legalities of some of these 15 points of how they fit state statute or perhaps don't fit. I'm not trying to argue. I'm just trying to learn all of. Does all of that fit under state statute? Your attorneys have looked at that and said, hey, this can work, or are these things you're hoping to negotiate in there, or how does that work?
Yeah, so it is true. You know, I think the Capital Improvement Board, the CIB, is a creature purely of state law, and it's really a creature that's designed to be run by and overseen by the county. County commissioners appoint a CIB. The budget is approved by the county council, and the bonds have to be approved by the county commissioners, et cetera, et cetera. We all, when we were discussing this 3 years ago now, agreed that if a CIB was going to be created, it couldn't be dominated by the county that way, but needed to be much more equitable with the city. So the notion was, for example, that the county commissioners could say, well, while we have the power to appoint all the members, we're going to delegate that power to the city for three of those spots. And while we have to approve the budget, it's true, we are also going to say no budget will be approved unless the city council also approves the budget and things like that. Similarly for the Convention Visitors Commission. So there was a bunch of specifics, and I know this gets so detailed, but a lot of this stuff kind of runs into the detail of who's responsible and what kind of equities there are. So that's what all that list was. We're quite comfortable that they're legal, but it is true that they are kind of added on to the state requirements. And one of the concerns, frankly, we have is that when you do that, it starts to get so cumbersome and so kind of overlapping and duplicative approvals that it can look pretty bureaucratic and difficult, which is why we think a 501c3 is much easier, because you can kind of design it to make sure everybody gets their bite at the apple and their oversight, but you don't have to do all these multiplying entities
things. Are you expecting a response from the commissioners to this, or what's the next step?
Mike, I'm a hopeful guy.
I know that.
I hope we will move this forward. Look, this is really important for the city's future, and I don't know what will happen, though. We'll have to see. It will be up to the county council and the city council on whether they want which direction they want to go, because I think there are a couple options. And
well, interestingly enough, you have no legal binding in any of this. True.
No, all I can do is propose play the best role I can. Now, it's a little odd that's one of the little strange things that the mayor is kind of a cheerleader from the outside on this. But I'm going to do my best to see if we can't land this plane and fill it up with food and beverage money and take it off and build a new convention center.
Well, I always try to point those out so people know who to sling their arrows at. And make sure that they've got the hate mail to the right address.
Thank you.
So that's
Thank you.
My pleasure. Okay, great. So obviously that's big news. You're encouraged by hopefully the negotiation moving forward. If there's going to be negotiation, do they take all 15 of these points? Do they take 7? Do they take any of them? Well, we hope to learn maybe something tomorrow night or tonight rather, or yeah. I don't know if the commissioners.
Next week we can talk about the showers building purchase.
I just saw that. Yes.
I'll be talking with city council about that tomorrow night.
Oh, good.
And then the vote next week, so we can catch up on that, because that's a really exciting public safety investment too.